Welcome back. We will be finishing up Chapter 4 with a discussion of fund families, mutual fund families, some of the services and some information about mutual funds, and then we'll take a look at a sample mutual fund and see what it has done for us over the long term. So let's start on slide number 60 with fund families. A family of funds exists when one investment company manages a group of mutual funds. Funds in the family vary in their objectives. Decades ago, a company may have had one or two mutual funds, but as we saw, as one mutual fund company would create one type of mutual fund, then they would all have to create that, and then another company would create a different company, different type of mutual fund, and they'd all have to create that. And so these huge fund families emerged. You can move your money from one fund to another within the fund, almost always with no charge, and that you've already paid the upfront fee or whatever fees you've paid, so you don't have to pay again. But if it's in a taxable account, if you have a regular, what's often called taxable account, then you're going to generate a taxable transaction because the IRS says, oh, you sold the one investment, you bought another investment, you either have capital gains or capital losses. You have to discuss that with the IRS and do what needs to be done with taxes. However, if it's in a retirement account or another type of tax-qualified account, you will not generate that transaction. And what has been done recently is that some mutual fund companies have begun charging fees for excessive transfers, or they will limit the number of transfers that you can do because this was part of what was going on with the hanky-panky back in 2003 that we discussed in the very first presentation. It is done to discourage that market timing and that trying to make money off of, you know, just slight little discrepancies in the price between what's going on in New York and Tokyo and London and the like. And Forbes said it best, folks. They said, choose a family, not a fund. Exactly. What it happens often is that people, they're almost like Will Rogers. They've never met a mutual fund that they didn't like, and they wind up with, you know, a couple dozens of mutual funds. Kind of ridiculous. And so you want to choose a family, and then you can stay within the family and move your money around as you need to. And on slide number 61, we see the top 10 mutual fund families as of December 2011. Again, we don't have the definitive data for 2012 yet. And here they are, folks. As we said, Vanguard is now the top mutual fund company, and they're getting all, in terms of size, they're getting lots of new money into their index funds and their exchange-traded funds. Fidelity, which had been number one for many years, is now number two, and American Funds, which has been around for, you know, since the 1930s along with Fidelity. And sometimes American Funds is a little bit ahead of Fidelity, but lately it's been under Fidelity. And American Funds actually is, that's what everybody knows them as. But the real name, that's why you see CRNM next to the name American Funds. The company is really called Capital Research and Management, but nobody knows it as such. Everyone calls it the American Fund, so there's a bit of trivia for you. And then PIMCO, yes, with their bond funds, they have vaulted to number four on the list. And PIMCO is based in the LA area, Pacific Investment Company, that's what it stands for. And they have one of the best bond managers in Bill Gross. And we'll discuss Mr. Gross later on when we get to bonds. And he's a great guy. He really is. He's very outspoken, and he writes all his stuff out on his website for anybody to read. So check him out, PIMCO. J.P. Morgan, you've heard of them, right? They bought a bunch of mutual fund companies. They have their own mutual funds. Franklin Templeton, very good company, great bond funds. And Franklin was the original company, and they bought the Templeton funds, and we'll talk about Sir John Templeton later on. They also own a series called Mutual Series. Some very good funds. BlackRock, boy, these guys are smart. One of your assignments is to go and take a look at the Thrift Savings Plan. The Thrift Savings Plan, which is the 401k plan for federal employees. Guess who runs that? You got it. How'd you like to have 2 million customers right off the bat by virtue of they all work for the federal government? Federated. Oh, I feel sorry for people. You can't say something nice. Don't say anything at all. And then one of my favorite mutual fund companies is T. Rowe Price. Been around for a long time. Great company based in the Baltimore area. Then a company called Dreyfus, which was purchased by the Bank of New York. Bank of New York is the oldest bank in the United States. We don't hear too much about it, but they're often called the Bankers Bank, but that's not true because the Fed is really the Federal Reserve Bank is the Fed Bankers Bank. But remember the TARP, the Troubled Asset Relief Program that was created after the turmoil of 2008? Guess who got the money first and doled it out to the other banks? Right, the Bank of New York. Right, exactly. So here they are. And in the face-to-face class, what we would do now is we would look at the offerings from Fidelity, Vanguard, and American funds. And so what I want you to do is to spend some time on the class website, and I have links to six of the companies, Fidelity, Vanguard, and American, plus Franklin and T. Rowe Price. And then one of my favorite mutual fund companies, very quirky company, called Dodge and Cox. Great funds, though, but only five funds. So what you're going to see, I mean, it's kind of crazy. You're going to see Fidelity with over 400 different funds, and then you can get up to 5,000 funds outside Fidelity on the Fidelity website. I mean, it's just insane. And so you're going to say, well, you know, can you imagine having 5,000 different choices? Well, lots of mutual fund companies will be happy to be put on Fidelity's website because they know Fidelity's so big. And so you have access to over Vanguard has about, what, 160 now? I haven't kept track. American is kind of strange. They only have about 30-some. They've added a few, so maybe up to 36 now. And the others have many, many, you'll see. But Dodge and Cox, five. Very, very different mutual fund company. So, slide number. So on your own, I want you to do some research. Maybe you have mutual funds in your 401k. I want you to take a look at their offerings. You get lost. And I don't mean that in a nasty way. I mean that in a fun way. Start doing the research, and of course I'm going to have you do a little bit of research as the assignment, but hopefully you'll get your interest piqued, you'll get some interest worked up, and you'll start looking at these companies. And don't limit yourself to these companies, there are dozens out there. Have some fun. Slide number 62. One of the things we said about mutual funds at the very beginning is that they are easy. The PETA factor, the pain in the, yes, is very low. And boy, don't they make it easy. 62 is, slide 62 discusses the automatic investment plans. These are mutual fund services that allow shareholders to automatically send fixed amounts of money from their paychecks or bank accounts into the fund. Now, there's a name for this that I want you to remember, and we're going to come back to it later, called dollar cost averaging. Dumb name, but a very powerful technique. Another name for this is pay yourself first, right? Before you make your cell phone payment, before you make a cable bill payment, you pay $50 to yourself, to your mutual fund. And in my humble opinion, this is the absolute bestest way to invest in a mutual fund. You don't have to worry about whether or not it's a good time to invest. Every month is a good time to invest $50 or $100 or whatever we can afford. That comes right out of our paycheck or right out of our checking account. And P.S. postscript, it is practically the only way most people will ever invest. You talk to some people and they say, well, I want to wait till about $5,000-$10,000 of spare cash. Yeah, right. Start saving now. Slide number 63. Automatic reinvestment plans. All mutual funds do this. They all do it now. They enable shareholders to automatically buy additional shares in the fund through the reinvestment of dividends, interest, and capital gains. An automatic reinvestment plan allows an investor to earn fully compounded rates of return. Yes, you see your investment grow much faster if you don't take the income that it throws off in the form of dividends, interest, and capital gains. Unless an investor needs the income, it is always a good idea to reinvest the dividends and capital gains received from a mutual fund. Now, they aren't even going to ask anymore. They are just going to assume that you want the dividends and interest and capital gains all reinvested into the fund. If you don't, then you have to tell them, hey, send me the money because I need it. And they don't even want to send you a check anymore. They want you to link your bank account with the mutual fund account, and they'll electronically send it to your checking account. Slide number 64. Speaking of withdrawals, systematic withdrawal plan. This is the mutual fund service that enables shareholders to automatically receive a predetermined amount of money monthly or quarterly, sometimes annually. And as we said, they don't like to send checks anymore. It costs them a whole lot more money than electronically transferring the money directly to your checking account. So here's the deal. Here's the deal, folks. You start putting $50, $100, especially you millennials, and you do that for 30 years. And then you start taking out $2,000 or $3,000 per month for the rest of your life. Well, you don't believe me, but wait till we get to the hypotheticals, and you're going to see that, yes, indeed, it can be done. Is it a guarantee for the future? No, it is not. But unless the world falls apart, we should do okay. And we've already talked a little bit about the conversion privilege or the exchange privilege. This allows the shareholders to move money from one fund to another fund within the same family of funds and not pay any extra fees. So as you grow older, your risk tolerance should be reduced, and you need to move the money that was all in stocks now more and more towards the bond world. And this kind of thing happens automatically with the lifestyle funds, with the target date funds that you're going to research when you look at the thrift savings plan. They will tell you to pick a date when you want to retire or when your kids are going to go to college. And then as it gets closer and closer to that date, they will do that for you. Yes, very interesting. But remember, if you do it in a regular account, you're going to trigger taxable transactions reportable to the IRS. Slide number 65. How do we buy the mutual funds? Well, if they're closed-end or if they're exchange-traded funds, you have to buy them through the stock exchange. And as we discussed, if you have an account with Vanguard or Fidelity, and I'm sure some of the other companies are doing this also, then you can create a brokerage account with them because they now have sister companies which are brokerage accounts, and they'll let you buy their ETFs without any brokerage fee. Nice. Open-ended funds through a broker directly from the investment company. The absolute bestest way, as I've described, is automatic contributions from your payroll, from your paycheck, from your checking account. And then selling the shares, redeeming the shares. Again, if they're closed-end or if they're exchange-traded funds, you have to go to the stock exchange. And if they're open-end, you call up your broker, you go online, call the mutual fund directly, and they will want you to do it automatically into your checking account because it's just a whole lot safer, cheaper, more better. Okay, slide number 66, taxes. Oh, Pat, come on. gotta always bring up yes, we do. We gotta bring up taxes. There are two types of taxes for regular accounts. These are accounts for which you pay taxes every year, and we will discuss these in detail much later on. Income dividends are taxed as income. Well, not anymore. The so-called Bush tax cuts, I heard an interview where he was really tired of, he didn't want to be associated with these things anymore. But now they've become permanent. And what they set was, and I do need to update this, I'll have to update this because I missed that, is that now it's 20% maximum. But that's only for people who are making over $400,000 if they're single, or $450,000. So for most of us grunts, we will pay a 15% max on our dividends. And maybe a 5% minimum if we make under a certain amount of money. That's on regular dividends. On interest that is paid through by regular dividends from, or no, I'm sorry, qualified dividends. That's what they're called, qualified dividends from stocks. If it's interest income from bonds, or if it's non-qualified dividends, and I'm not sure, I forget exactly some of the rules for that, then you'll have to pay taxes as if they were income at your marginal tax bracket. And what am I talking about? Take Business 121. Capital gains distributions, again, that 15% max has gone up to 20% for people making over $400,000 if they're single, $450,000 if they're married. But most of us working grunts will pay no more than 15%, and many of us will only pay 5%. Reinvested dividends and capital gains are still considered taxable transactions by the IRS. So save your year-end statements. Well, most of the companies now save them forever on their websites. But what happens is that people kind of get testy. They don't see any money come into their pocket, but they get a 1099 at the tax time in January, and it says, you know, you earn this much money, you have to pay taxes on it. But you didn't get that money in your pocket. It was reinvested back into the mutual fund. And because of the stock market or the bond market might have fallen, you've actually lost money. But you still have to pay taxes. And so people complain to their Congress bozos. I'm sorry, I'm their congressmen and women. And say, what's going on here? Why am I paying taxes and I didn't even make any money? I lost money. Well, there's always talk, not always, but every few years there's talk about changing the way that we pay taxes on mutual funds. Yeah, I don't think it's ever going to happen, because if it does, it would create an accounting nightmare. I certainly hope it doesn't happen, even though it would be nice not to have to pay taxes on money you didn't receive. But the idea would be that unrealized capital gains, also called paper profits, would not be taxed until you sell your mutual fund, and my little doubtful and forget it comments are my way of saying I don't think this is ever going to happen, because oh boy, would it just make life really, really painful for those of us who do our own taxes and the people who do taxes and those of people who don't do taxes but then are berated by the people who are doing their taxes. Why didn't you keep track of all? Yeah. If they're in tax-deferred retirement accounts or educational savings accounts or medical savings accounts, 401ks, Roth IRAs, 529 plans for college, then you pay no taxes until you retire or use the money for education. And if it's in a Roth IRA, then you never pay taxes. I'm a big, big fan of the Roth. And we'll discuss those way at the end of the semester in the in the Business 121 class. We discuss these at length. Slide number 67. Now, where do you go to get your information? One of your assignments is to take a look at the annual report, and I also want you to take a look at the prospectus. We take a look at a prospectus in the face-to-face class, and I think I told you. I'm not exactly sure where. Nobody reads these things. their statement describing the risk factors, the fund's past performance, the types of investments, the information about dividends, distributions, and taxes, information about the fund's management. Nobody reads them! Unless you've taken Biz 123, and it's really not that hard. In fact, they're very useful if you have insomnia. But what I hope you do is using the links on the class website, or, you know, just doing your own little research, take a look at the summary prospectus, which is only about 8 pages or so, and then if you want to, you can take a look at the whole prospectus. I forget the name of the big one, the statutory, the bigger one, 32 pages, something like that, and try to read it, and it'll really put you to sleep. But much more interesting, depending on the mutual fund company, is the annual report. And that's your assignment. Your assignment is to download one of these annual reports, and if you need a paper one, contact me. I have some extras. Or just call up a mutual fund company, and they'll send it to you. They'll say, wouldn't you rather download it off their website? Because, you know, it doesn't cost them anything to download it off their website. And pour through it. P-O-R-E, pour through it. Go through it and read it from cover to cover. Now, at the end, it's going to get a little boring, and you're probably not going to be able to continue near the end, because that's when all the numbers are thrown at you by the accounting and the public accounting firms whose job it is to make sure that there's no hanky-panky going on. But that's your assignment, and I hope you enjoy it. I hope you enjoy it, because some of these are quite fascinating. Others are, there's a commentary on the assignment sheet. You'll find that some of these companies do their best to hide how bad they've done. They don't really want you to figure out that they're not doing a good job. Yeah. Slide number 68. How about the financial world? What do they have to offer? Well, as we said, Morningstar and Lipper are two of the big companies that rate mutual funds. I don't really like Morningstar myself, but, you know, I go to their website. If you go to their website, they're going to try to sign you up for $10 a month, $50 a month, so be careful. Business Week, Forbes, Kiplinger's Money, Smart Money, what else? They're just all these magazines. And then there are these surveys that they produce. U.S. News and World Report has a very popular survey where they rank the funds and compare them to funds in the same categories and have the fund size, the sales charge, expense ratios, the risk factors, the toll-free numbers. And the thing that people seem to focus on first is the history. Past 3, 5, and 10 years. I like, as I say, to look how well they've done over decades. But, you know, you definitely want to take a look at how they've done recently also. So these are all out there. They're on the web. They're in the libraries. Yes. Now, how about websites? My favorite website for finance is Yahoo. And I'm not alone. It's pretty popular. But there are many others out there, folks. Bloomberg is another popular one. MarketWatch, which is, I think, now owned by Wall Street Journal, right? CNBC. There is plenty of them. But we will take a look at Yahoo Finance in detail when we get to Chapter 5. And then the mutual fund companies' internet sites themselves. And they have gotten very good. Back in the late 90s, when the internet was all the rage, the mutual fund companies started investing heavily in their websites. And some of them were just awesome. T. Rowe Price and Vanguard were just great. Vanguard had this investing university, or I forget what it was called, but I used to go there often. And then in the turmoil of 2000 to 2002, I don't know what happened. I didn't bother asking. I should have. But it seemed that all the mutual fund companies just stopped doing education. They just tried to dummy it up. Maybe the SEC told them to shut up. I don't know. But now you go back to their websites and they have videos and articles, and they really are promoting education again. And I want to tell you that Vanguard is one of the best out there for this. T. Rowe Price is excellent. Fidelity I find a little bit too much, but that's Fidelity. They if one is good, two is better, 27 is best. Dodge and Cox is we told you that they're the little quirky one. They have some nice videos where they very down home kind of folks. And then Franklin, excellent, excellent website. So check out the mutual fund. And again, there are many other companies out there. And then the mother load of information is at the ICI.org, Investment Company Institute, org. Why? Because they're a nonprofit that's funded. It's the trade organization by the mutual fund companies. It's funded by the mutual fund companies. And that's where you get the mother load of information. Sometimes it's contradictory. I've spent a lot of time on this website, and sometimes I have a hard time understanding what's going on. But their annual fact book is, I find, the best source of information about the mutual fund industry as a whole. But the other reports that they publish throughout the year, they're sometimes very difficult to penetrate. Okay, so play. I know. Come on, Payano, you're not serious. Yes, I am. This is what I do for a good time. I enjoy it, and this is probably why I'm teaching what I'm teaching, right? Because for me, this is fun. And if you find that you really enjoy this, that's a great sign. You could be your own financial advisor. You might become a professional money manager, a professional financial representative, a stockbroker someday, insurance, banking, get into the financial world. If you find you absolutely hate this and would rather eat barbed wire than go to these websites and take a look at the articles and look up their mutual funds and see what they have to say about the economy and companies and their mutual funds, then you know what? That's probably a good sign that you don't want to get into the industry. All right? So it's not everybody's the same. Slide number 70. So maybe you haven't done this yet, but in the face-to-face, we would have already looked at the hundreds of mutual funds from Fidelity, the hundred and some from Vanguard, and some of them from American, and maybe looked at one or two others. And you've seen that the industry is just absolutely huge. And you've gone through all the materials about the A shares and the B shares and the C shares and the different types of stock funds and the bond funds and the balance funds and the money market mutual funds, and you're saying, okay, how do I pick a mutual fund? And I did that on purpose. I really did throw all this information at you. Why? Because it's important. Plus, this is what people are up against. As mutual fund investors, there are just too many choices. And so my advice, for what it's worth, is to pick a mutual fund that invests in high-quality stocks or bonds. There's that word, quality. And it's a hard word to define. You know, one person's definition of quality is not the same as another person's. But you want mutual funds that look for good quality stocks, high quality stocks, high quality bonds. You want a mutual fund that is well diversified. Why do we buy mutual funds? Diversification. Across several industries, sectors of the economy. In my personal opinion, you want to emphasize global mutual funds. You want a mutual fund that has a long-term perspective and a manager, or better yet, in my humble opinion, a management team with many years of experience. You want to, again, in my humble opinion, avoid companies that shuffle their managers every few years like a deck of cards. And this used to be the de-rigger way of mutual funds to do business. You would throw somebody into the position after they've been there a couple of years as a research analyst and say, oh, here you go, here's $2 billion, have at it. And if they did well over 18 months, 2 years, great, they got to keep their job. If not, oh well, shuffle the deck again and let's see what happens. Well, you know what, it wasn't a very good way of picking fund managers. You'd get some really, really good people and you'd get some really not so very good people. And so now more and more mutual fund companies are realizing that they need to give these people more training, more time to prove themselves. It used to be about 5-6 years ago, before the turmoil of 2008, that the average tenure of a mutual fund manager was 4 years. That was the average. So obviously some have a whole lot more than four, and a whole lot have a lot less than four. It has gone up. It has gone up to over 5 years. But still, it's a cutthroat business, and now you understand better about why some mutual funds don't do very well. Because the mutual fund manager, first of all, has to beat the fee that the mutual fund charges. Plus, at the same time, they know that if they don't produce quickly, they're going to be out the door. So they tend to take bigger bets, tend to take more riskier investments. And if they win, great, they get to keep their job. But if they lose, oh well, they're going to get canned anyway. And that mentality, many mutual fund companies realize, is counterproductive, is not in the best interest of the clients. Again, in my humble opinion. So this, they are doing less and less. They are shuffling the deck fewer and fewer times, thankfully. So, how do you pick a mutual fund? Well, in the face-to-face class now, we would spend some time with some documentation and looking at a single mutual fund that has been around for 79 years. Is that long enough for you? And, you know, 6, 8, 9, 10%. How about 12%? This thing has done 12% over decades. And it's very cool. When we take a look at some of the statistics, and they're on the website, folks. They're on the class website, and there are commentaries. They're not all there yet because we haven't got all the data yet for 2012. My apologies. But you'll find that some of the things people say, well, stocks are too risky. Well, as we'll see, yeah, in the short term, they sure are risky. But in the long term, no, they have not been that risky, provided you've been willing to have a long-term perspective. Now's not a good time to invest. Well, excuse me, when is it ever a good time to invest? In fact, the times that people believe are the best times to invest usually turn out to be the worst times to invest. Well, okay, let me ask you a question. What if you invested on the worst day of the year for the past 20 years? How did you do? Well, it turns out you did actually pretty well. You didn't do as well as the person who invested on the best day. But are you going to invest on the worst day? Are you going to invest on the best day? No. If you're like most of us working grunts, you're going to put $50, $100, maybe more if we can afford it, through our 401k, through our 403b, into a Roth IRA every month. So some months are going to be good months, and some months are not going to be so good. And what about when the market has a downturn? Should you run for cover, run for the exits? No. No, 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 no. You keep a long-term perspective, realizing that if the whole world falls apart, it doesn't matter where your money is. And what you're going to do is dollar cost average. Dollar cost average on slide number 72. We said it's a silly name, it's a boring name, it's a dumb name, nobody can remember it. But it's a very powerful tool. A system of buying an investment at regular intervals with a fixed dollar amount. Huh? It's what I've been saying. $50, $100 a month. You don't worry about what time is the best time to invest. You don't worry about how much you need to put in. You see, the cool thing about dollar cost averaging is there is always good news. I tell my wife, I say Anita, because that's her name, Anita, and I've been telling this for a while now, she's sick of hearing it. No matter what happens tomorrow, dear, when we wake up in the morning, there's always good news for us. That's how lucky we are. The market is up, good news, yippee, yippee, because our account, your account is worth more, you're making money. The market is down. Good news. What? What do you mean it's good? Well, if you're young and have a long-term perspective, yes, this is a great news. Because next month you're going to get more shares at a lower price when that $50, when that $100 comes out of your paycheck or your checking account. Now, is it a guarantee? No, of course not. If the market keeps going down, your investments keeps going down, great, you're buying more shares at a lower price and they get lower. It's not a guarantee. No, there's no guarantees. Once you leave the bank, when you're $250,000 in your savings account, there are no guarantees. And something I'm going to ask you to remember, and you probably won't, but that's okay. Uh-oh, go away. Why does it do that? My apologies. It does that every once in a while. Your average cost per share should be lower than your average price per share. What? Just, if you can, memorize that. We'll go come back to what it means, but if you look at the typical examples with dollar cost averaging, because you're putting in a fixed amount, when the market goes lower, you're buying more shares. When the market goes higher, you're buying fewer shares. So it turns out that your average cost per share winds up, not always, but usually, lower than your average price per share because you bought more shares at a lower price. Think about it for a while, memorize it, and we'll come back to it later, and it should make a whole lot more sense when we come back to it later in the semester. So, slide number 73. In the face-to-face class, we would now turn our attention to what are called hypotheticals. They're also called illustrations, hypothetical illustrations. They are examples of returns of investments for either a lump sum principal or streams of investments, series of deposits, also called dollar cost averaging. And if you did these in the in chapter one, the future value handouts, that's basically what we were doing. We were doing illustrations, or a combination of lump sum and streams of investments. They must be approved by the Securities Exchange Commission and FINRA, the Financial Industry Regulatory Authority. So, if you go to a broker, the broker will have the ability, because they're licensed, to run these illustrations. If you call up the mutual fund company, they'll probably hem and haw, because they don't normally want to do that for you. They have to have somebody who's licensed do it for you. And they must contain disclaimers about past versus future performance. You know, you've seen that. The past results are not guarantees of future performance. That kind of thing. You can and will lose money at certain times, not backed by a bank or any other entity guaranteed by the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation or any other federally sponsored. All kinds of scary stuff to make you understand that you can lose money, folks. And people get really upset when they lose money. Trust me. So what I want you to do, not now, maybe a little bit later, but I want you to go on the class website and look for the hypotheticals. And I haven't created I've created the hypotheticals, but I haven't created the little presentation. It'll be up there. It'll be up there by the time you see this. So and you can watch my little presentation describe what happened to these hypothetical individuals who put $50 away, $100 away over the long term. Okay? Great. Slide number 74. And so after we've taken a look at this one individual fund and its hypothetical illustration of dollar cost averaging over time, I come back to you with slide number 74 and say, that ain't the only one, folks. I'm not trying to say this is that one investment company, America, it's called, is the only mutual fund that you should invest in. Oh, no. There are many, many good funds. There are many more not so great funds. But every single one of these mutual funds has been around for over 50 years. And every single one has done pretty darn good, either 10% or pretty darn close, 11%, 12%, 1%, almost 13%. And notice some of the names. Franklin, T. Rowe Price, Fidelity, Vanguard. Right, and then Mutual Shares is Franklin, and the Templeton Growth Fund, there's Franklin. And then there's one of Dodge & Cox's funds, done very well over the long term. A balanced fund, doing 10%. Pretty darn good. And then a few of these, three of these are from American. MFS is another company based in Boston. They're the oldest mutual fund company. They have the oldest mutual fund currently in existence. 1924, I think. Yeah, like that. Dreyfus, right? Bank of New York. Putnam. Oppenheimer has one. Anybody else I missed? No, that's it. The American funds are American Mutual Investment Company of America and Washington Mutual Investors Fund. They don't call them the American funds. You have to sort of figure that one out. They're a little kinky that way. But look at that, folks. Look at all those funds that have done 10% or pretty darn close or better over 50 years. Not bad, huh? And there are many other funds that are not 50 years old that have done this well or better. So there's a little bit of hope for your future. Slide number 75. What is the bottom line on mutual funds, folks? The bottom line for me, in my humble opinion, is choose a fund family and stick with them. Because there's a saying in the industry, and it has been proven statistically to be true. Most mutual fund investors do worse than the mutual funds they invest in. Huh? How could that be? How could you do worse than the mutual fund you invest in? Very simple. It's very simple. You wait until the market goes up 50, 100%, and you yell out, ooh, 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 is it too late to get in? You jump in only to watch the mutual fund and the market fall 20, 30, 40%. You jump out as you yell, ooh, 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 is it too late to get out? And so it's been shown that people have jumped in to mutual funds in general just at the wrong time and have pulled out again right at the wrong time, and they've done worse than the mutual funds. So my advice is to reevaluate them periodically. Once or twice a year is good enough, folks. Providing you've done your upfront research, providing you trust the advisor, if you've gone with an advisor, yeah, once or twice a year is enough. Make changes judiciously and sparingly. You like that word, judiciously and sober as a judge? As you approach retirement, migrate from stock funds to bond funds, as your lifestyle fund will do for you in your 401k. But don't give up on stocks entirely. And we don't show this on the website, but they show in that ICA illustration how you would have done if you had gone with bonds versus stocks, even in retirement, and you still did better with stocks in retirement. And dollar cost average. $50 a month, $100 a month, whatever is affordable for you, but for the most part, forget about them. That's why they're mutual funds. The investment company is investing on our behalf. Do not be one of the mutual fund investors that does worse than your mutual funds. Don't yell out, is it too late to get in? Don't, and then jump in, and don't yell out, is it too late to get out? And then jump out. All right? I hope I have convinced you. You know what? It sounds all too boring now, doesn't it? Right? Well, it is. Mutual funds are boring. And there's a saying, mutual funds will bore you to wealth. You want excitement? Wait till we get to the next chapter on stocks. And so here we are, folks, at the very end of chapter 4 on slide 76. And we are now the mutual fund wizards. We're the gurus. We're the experts. So go back over these, listen to them, view them, study them, and be awesome when you're in that 401k meeting with your fellow students. Because next week, oh boy, does it get exciting, we start Chapter 5 on stocks and the stock market. See ya!